Hello and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We are a podcast based in the northeast of England where I like to see what's good with art. My name is Alice.
My name's Rosie.
And something we like to do here in Hey Art, What's Good? Is to like check in with each other, see what's good with us, see if we've got anything cool that I want to share. So Rosie, what's good with you this week?
Thank you very much for asking. Well, what's not good with me this week? Off topic.
Flip it on its head real quick.
Is that I can't see Alice right now. But that links in to, because technical issues, guys, it's really annoying. it's always me as well. Don't know what that is. But my good thing is that we did see each other spontaneously. And it was for this very exhibition that we're going to talk about right now. But that's, I think, what I miss about, like, the thing 2020 has been lacking is spontaneity. So I'm going to, yes, like, take a moment to appreciate that, the spontaneousness of how we ended up going to see Art Deco by the Sea at the Lang.
Yeah.
It was before nice we go on to that.
Yeah.
Whoa, you're not allowed to tell me what's nice. You have to tell me what's nice with you first.
That's true. Well, what's good with me is I was gonna say I learned a new skill, kind of. As people might know, I'm a photographer and develop my own film, and recently for the first time ever developed like slide film. So, you know, like back in the day you get like transparency film where you can like do like a slideshow with your family or whatever and like click a button and it'll go on to the next slide, like Marge's sisters in The Simpsons.
Yes, Patty and Selma, legends.
Yes. Absolute legends. Well, I developed that for the first time this week and it actually turned out great. It was like photos I shot back in summer when it was like nice and bright and warm and stuff, and then I only have one kit for it, so I was like, oh, I'll save the kit until I've like shot a few rolls so I can like kind of do them all in one go, and it turned out great. It's just so cool seeing like your strip of film and all the like the colors are the right way around and like nice, so aww, it was pretty exciting.
Well, good job, new things. Love that.
Yeah, something else that I loved was the exhibition that we're going to talk about in this episode. It was pretty cool.
Pretty cool, just like that segue.
Thank you. So at the Lang in Newcastle, there's a new like paid exhibition on, and it's huge and it's just thoroughly enjoyable. It's called Art Deco by the Sea. And what I literally wrote in my notes, so stupid, is alternate title. What do we want? Art Deco. Where do we want it? By the sea. Art Deco by the Sea is a bit like more to the point and stuff, but that was kind of what ran
but
through
I
my
like
head.
I your
first
title. Well, when we're creative directors of the Lang.
Oh, perfect. Cool.
These are the sorts of changes you can expect to see.
Yep. From the very clear trajectory for that career change. But this exhibition, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's looking at kind of artworks that depict Art Deco and specifically like visits to the seaside and like leisure time in the UK specifically.
Which I'm all about because I'm a seaside baby.
Rosie is a seaside baby. That's true.
And Whitley Bay is featured in this exhibition, which I'm quite excited about. Because when is Whitley Bay ever featured in anything, really?
In The Guardian for having one of the best shopping streets in the UK last year. Park View.
Interesting.
Which, like, it's a nice shopping street, I guess.
But it can't be the best. Surely not.
Well,
I love it, but... Well, that's, like, the same as when
Digi
was voted one of the best clubs in Europe. So
oh,
I don't know who's
God,
making these
yeah
lists.
I'm sure some other popular clubs would disagree with that. But
yes. I'm sure many people who've been to Digi would also disagree with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I would, yeah. I'm a huge club person, but I'm like, no, I don't think it's that good. Like, but
anyway,
back to Art Deco. What is Art Deco, you might be asking? It's most commonly kind of referred to in kind of architectural terms. So it's kind of one of those things that everyone like can point at an Art Deco building and say, oh, that's an Art Deco building. It's just got such a kind of, yeah, such a distinctive kind of style. And like largely it's like curves, kind of like white-ish, like concrete,
Is a word that comes to mind.
Yes. Like very like clean very nice.
Clean lines, clean colours, clean forms.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the architectural style, like you can kind of see like clear influences with like kind of modernism and like the German Bauhaus movement of like the 1920s and stuff. Because that kind of introduced lots of like concretely like clean lines. Like I think a big distinction between like the kind of modernism and Bauhaus with Art Deco is like lots of like straight and like points a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Like there's a few like I've seen in Berlin, because that's where like, the Bauhaus school was back in the day. Like there's the like I think it's like called the Berlin Gallery or like the Berlinisch Gallery. It's like it's kind of a modernist art gallery with art from like the late 1800s to like current day, but that's like beautiful like glass, white, clean kind of lines and stuff, but like it's more pointy, I would say, mm-hmm. than your average Art Deco building.
I would agree, that's a good distinction, because I always think of like Bauhaus and modernism being like very clear, like right angles and stuff. And all about like a lot to do with like the relationship between function and form.
I was going to say, like, practicality, I think, was quite a big kind of influence. And that does come in with Art Deco as well. It kind of does keep a lot of the kind of practical elements, but just makes it a bit prettier, really, because a large part of the Art Deco movement, like, and what's specifically looked at this exhibition is its relationship to, like, leisure time and, like, pleasure and having, like, fun, like, at home. So, like, they're kind of made to be, like, big kind of statement buildings, but like nice to look at, and like a lot of them would have been like hotels and resorts and stuff, so like it needed that kind of big kind of like draw in, like comfortable, like really nice looking sort of design.
And that's an element of luxury,
it's just
I think
nice
yeah luxury. Definitely luxury, because I was thinking, well, we were just kind of saying before we started recording that it's like, for me, it's the attention to detail, which I think is why it's such a renowned architectural like style, because the attention to detail in the architecture, but in everything as well, really, is just breathtaking. It's just like, yeah, let's, I think people honestly must have felt like they were like living in the future. It looks, oh, yeah. some of this stuff could have been made tomorrow.
Yeah, because I mean, if you just kind of think what like the standard form of architecture was like before that, like Edwardian sort of architecture, it's like kind of like much more like traditional, I was gonna say bog standard, that's not necessarily fair, but like, you know, like you got your like standard bricks and all that, maybe still like a bit of wood, but like it just seems like such a huge departure from that, and like quite quickly as well.
I was just about to say, I think it's the speed of it, because I'm thinking about like predecessors, is that the people that came before? Yay, nice. yeah, if you think about like as like Edwardian and Victorian and Georgian, it's all very much like it's busy. It's like it's full, it's a lot all at once, and it's a bit much. And I feel like Art Deco is like the edit started to come in. It's like about like taking things away and making like large beautiful spaces to navigate, and I think there is this grand sense of space in a lot of Art Deco artwork, architecture, fashion, and it's kind of highlighted by the, as we've said, there's a lot of like fun lines, clean crisp lines that draw the eye, and it's all it's we're both big fans, I think, if that's not coming across by now. big fans.
Yeah. I mean, just some kind of like local examples of Art Deco, which I think we could probably go into a little bit more in a bit, is like, I mean, the first one that pops into mind is where Wylam Brewery is in Exhibition Park, because that was the like the Palace of Arts for the 1929 like Exhibition of the North, which we learned through this exhibition, again, we'll talk about more, that was actually a huge, massive complex of beautiful Art Deco buildings, and that one is the only one that remains, but like it has
that was
kind
of one of the smaller ones as well.
Oh yeah, that was like the little building at the front, like that's like the welcome space, but again, like on the inside, like if you've actually been like under the dome, just like big airy, like it was an event space, an exhibition space, but like on the outside it's like all white. You've got like the curves of like the dome and stuff, but you've still got that kind of modernisty influence, like pillars and like straight lines like at the front. A less grand example would be the West Monkseaton metro station.
yep.
Which like it's a little bit manky, but like it's a pretty enough like kind of design if you kind of like have a step back and be like, oh yeah, that's kind of art deco-y.
I remember vividly because I'm like my mum lives next to West Monkseaton, so like me and my childhood friends all are very well acquainted with that metro stop. And one time when I think it was when Alice was like working at the coast or something, but you took a lovely picture of like West Monkey Metro, and I was with someone, I think it was with our friend David or something, and he was just like, how the hell did she make that look nice? Because it is manky is a bit of an understatement, but it's really cool. It's got like lovely windows and the colors and borders, and it's all all pictures will be on Instagram,
yeah,
at Hey Art What's Good. Just to fill you in, get your fix.
Indeed.
But there is a surprising amount of Art Deco still around, which is nice.
Yeah.
Love it. I don't think it ever went out of fashion. I think, or maybe it did a little bit a few decades ago. But like, I just think it's timeless. It's lovely.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where like, everything comes back around, but it does like take a while. Like, nothing really necessarily gets a kind of like historical significance until it becomes historic, and like a lot of the time a lot of places get like knocked down and stuff, and it's like only like years later people are like, oh, we probably should have kept that, but yeah, never mind.
It was minging at the time, and you do, like when you don't realize it's like it's that moment when you realize every moment is history.
Yeah,
like we're now currently living history.
And
I feel like, well, I've been saying that a lot because 2020 has been a really weird year. But like, I say it a lot. It's the only difference between the bowl you eat your dinner out of and the bowls you see that are all cracked in the British Museum is time.
Yeah.
Literally the only difference between those objects. And that someone once had that bowl and ate their food out of it, and it wasn't a big deal. And it was just something they needed back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. So
crazy,
interesting. But in like in that vein, we haven't even started talking about the show yet, but in that vein, I feel like, because I was talking to someone at, this was years ago now, I was talking to someone in a National Trust property, like someone that worked in one of the rooms, and they were saying how, because me and Mum play this game where we go and we're like, choose what we want out of the room, like for our imaginary mansion that we have. And the person we were talking to was saying how Rococo furniture, so think of it like, I think Rococo is the exact opposite of Art Deco in that it's all like swirls and curls and ridiculous amounts of detail, and it's a lot. It's very extra. but apparently, I mean, as I say, this was like at least 5 years ago now, but he was saying like, well, you could comparatively get this Rococo style furniture for so much cheaper than stuff that was made in like the 20s and the 30s because that's what's fashionable. So then what I'm like waiting for the Rococo stuff to become fashionable again, and I can't even imagine it because the very nature of fashion trends is that it's very in the moment, and like how could Rococo be fashionable, but like it will be in the same way that Art Deco is fashionable now. So food for thought, just a little interesting takeaway.
So it's a waiting game,
and
then we can say Rosie called it when it happens.
Exactly, it's on record now.
But yeah, let's get into the exhibition. It's huge. As I say, it's one of those ones that takes up like three different like galleries in the Lang.
I'm a little bit nervous to do curation corner, if I'm honest.
I'll help, don't worry.
Thank you.
But they are kind of like handily split into kind of sections. So when you get in the first room, I forgot, Rosie, to make a note of the colours of the walls, but every time I go at the Lang, these huge, huge galleries, I mean, it's the same for like every like big kind of gallery, like all the walls have been like repainted, and this time it's in like nice kind of like pastel-y colour. So it's not just white walls, which I guess would go, but I feel as though those are kind of
it. I've noticed they've been breaking up that like white cube space.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate because it's overdone potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for something like this when like the white cube isn't necessarily appropriate.
Mm.
But you're spot on with the, you said pink there. So when you walk into the first room, it's like half and half. So half the room is blue and half the room is yellow, but they're these lovely dusty kind of muted tones. And then it's when you go into the second room that there's like pink and blues and turquoises, and it's a bit more like, a bit more exotic.
Ooh. Bit more flashy, but in a cool, understated way.
Yeah, very Art Deco.
But yeah, in the first room, I think you're kind of immediately introduced to architecture, and there's like quite a few photos, but there's a lot of like kind of architectural like plans and blueprints and stuff. I mean, one of the most beautiful bloody Art Deco buildings I think I've ever seen is Marine Court at St. Leonard's-on-Sea, which I don't know where that is.
Yes.
I assume down south. But it's everything we've described. It's like beautiful, white, got nice curves and stuff. But you'll also notice it looks very distinctly like a big boat, like an ocean liner. It's crazy, like exactly like a boat, but it's a huge building instead. It's amazing.
And just like right on the coast. So it's kind of like this beached massive ship.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like kind of staggered and layered, like so like it would have like a kind of top deck where you have like sunbathing or like a pool like on a big old boat, and then like each layer like kind of like ascends, like kind of steps. It's like every like either each one's kind of a bit receded, but these are like people's apartments, or I think it's apartments, where they'd have like balconies and stuff like that. So this isn't necessarily an example of like a big like hotel or resort space or something, but I imagine it was luxury apartments back in the day, and maybe even now, because I mean it looks cool.
It does look lovely. I'd live there. And I feel like, and this is pulling back memories from university, but I have a feeling like that at this time, that kind of staggered like balcony roof situation, you know what I mean, like where it kind of goes back, was like quite a new architectural trend. I remember learning about it in this sort of era, so I'd have to fact check that, but it was like all the rage, and it's obviously to do with like making sure that everyone gets sun for like some part of the day, and like
yeah,
and I have a feeling a lot of this stuff was possible because they just properly invented concrete that we could use for buildings, because skyscrapers couldn't exist until concrete was, you know, fine-tuned.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the reason is because concrete is flexible. So I hate this idea, but in the wind, how buildings move. Yeah. So it's got to be made of concrete so that it can sway. A little bit awful. Like when you think about that next time you're in a skyscraper, I dare you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, just on the topic of skyscrapers real quick, I feel as I might have talked about this before because I'll never shut up about it, but like the oldest skyscraper in like Europe is in Rotterdam. And obviously it's like very bricky and beautiful and ornate, and it's maybe 10 floors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe 10 floors. There's like a bit more like in the roofy bit, but like that would have took ages to do with like your standard like bricks and mortar and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's very like angular and like somewhat traditional, even though it's a weird skyscraper thing. But yeah, concrete, you just get so much done with it.
Because you see that quote unquote skyscraper now, and it's like titchy.
Oh yeah, it's teeny weeny.
Bless.
But yeah, in that room, you kind of go around, and on the walls, it's like architecture-y stuff. Lots like examples of different build, at least on the left hand side of the room, which is like there's arrows on the floor because it's like a one-way system like everywhere is at the moment. So you go around. This is interesting actually, Rosie, because I wonder if we would have went that way, because obviously me and you usually go opposite ways in exhibitions for some reason, so I wonder if we would have followed
totally
the kind of
accidentally
clockwise
as
route.
Well.
Yeah.
My instinct is, well, I don't know, because I normally would have probably gone right, but the arrows told us to go left.
Yep. Gotta follow the arrows. Gotta be safe.
Got to. Did it. Didn't get COVID. Yet.
Well.
As far as I know.
But once you've seen these things, like, on the walls and stuff, like, as soon as you go in, there's, like, a little wall with, like, a painting and some information about the exhibition on. But behind that wall and then in the middle of the room is, like, objects. So, like, bits of furniture and stuff, which were amazing.
Yes, like, big fan.
Yeah. Like, there was a few chairs. So, like, the thing with Art Deco and modernist kind of furniture is that inherently it doesn't look super comfortable. It looks cool. Like, there's one, there's this like kind of wooden chair, and like it's cool because it's like it's like made out of just one bit of wood. It's like curvy, and like it looked like it was like well used. Like, the arms and stuff were a bit more worn down and stuff. But like, I don't know why it was well used, because it's just a wooden chair that doesn't look super comfortable, but it looks nice.
That's it. I feel like a lot of this stuff and a lot of very like arty stylistic stuff from the like the 20s and 30s was just form over function. It didn't actually matter what it was for, as long as it looked nice. You're good. And like, yeah, there was this like interesting relationship, and I'd love to like look a little bit more in depth into that, because that's always fascinated me, this idea between like elevating a normal object to be art by kind of disregarding its function, which is just backwards.
Definitely.
But interesting.
Yeah.
I'm much more in favor of something being beautiful and functional. That's like my aesthetic, but
I'm a big fan of that too, yeah. So there was a couple chairs there. There was this really lovely, what I assume was a light. It was like kind of standard, like, very 1920s looking to me, of like a person like holding this light above their head or like in front of them or something. And like the light itself was kind of like a cracked looking glass orb, which obviously wasn't plugged in. But like, I would love one of those personally. Like, it looked like it was a ton weight, like.
I think it was like bronze or something, and it was on like marble, and it was, beautiful. So it's this like naked lady.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. And she's all like on her tiptoes and bent kind of backwards, holding up this light. And then the first thing I thought of was two of them on a huge mantelpiece in front of a huge mirror. All marble, clean lines, done. Mood lighting, sorted. Yeah. But yeah, that was like one of my favorite objects as well, definitely. And then the very uncomfortable. There were several uncomfortable looking chairs, but it was the one at the very end that was my favorite. And I really quite liked
the material on it.
No, it was bare bones. It might have not been at the end. I can't quite remember, but it was like, I think it was probably the one, like, the one where it's like one bit of wood that just flows beautifully. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty cool chair.
Classy. It was good. But at the same time, you're going to have to throw, like, a cushion on there. Come on.
Yeah, I like something. Chair was designed by Gerald Summers in 1933.
Ooh.
So we can throw a picture on there, because that's one of the... This is one of those exhibitions that you're not allowed to take photos in. We might have took a couple, but...
Did we? Yes, we did. Sorry, Lang.
But there's a few photos in the press release that we're allowed to use, so we'll pop that on the Instagram.
Had a little look. That lamp we're talking about was from 1928. The Royal Pavilion and Museum in Brighton.
Oh, yes.
Is the owner of it. But it says it's some French words, and I'm not even going to try. I'm sorry.
I assume Max Laveria is the designer, the maker or something. But it's a lush lamp, man. Lovely.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be like pride and joy of our Instagram for a second there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
want that in my house. You could dress her up.
Oh my god, you could. pop a little hat on her.
Yeah. Seasonal. Why did Lang ever like let us into their gallery? We just
One of my favourite photos of the exhibition was in this room, and it's of the Dreamland Cinema in Margate. It's beautiful. And I was just telling the Rosie before we started recording, like, I've seen quite a few, like, black and white like photos of like nighttime scenes, and I've never actually gone out and done that, so this has made me want to do it. But it's the cinema, it's like all these nice striking lines with like kind of curved corners, but just like really just lit up, like it's beautiful,
and the fonts are amazing. It looks like an imagined scene from like a graphic novel or a movie.
Yeah,
it almost doesn't look
like
real
a noir
to me
sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
absolutely
lush. It is just a beautiful, beautiful photo.
Yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, so that's the kind of start of introduction into like the kind of entertainment aspect of like the Art Deco style, like to draw people in and to be used as kind of like a functional, like commercial sort of space. And actually something I was having a little bit of a read about is a lot of Art Deco, it not necessarily influenced the kind of Art Deco that we saw, but it was also found in like British coastal towns. A lot of stuff that was exhibited in the International Exhibition of Modern Decorative and Industrial Arts in Paris in 1925. So there was a lot of emphasis on like electric lights being used for like dramatic kind of effect, for like strip lighting.
Such a new and fabulous invention.
Yeah.
Now accessible to everyone.
Yeah, so like when you see this photo of the Dreamland, it's like, oh yeah, of course. But like it was around this time, like late 20s and all throughout the 1930s, like the Blackpool Illuminations. Like
I was hoping you were going to talk about that, because yeah. I really want to talk about the Blackpool Pleasure Beach as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think that might be some of my favourite photographs, some of the old black and white photographs of the Pleasure Beach, because I feel like it's like a northern rite of passage. You have to have been to Blackpool and you have to have been to Blackpool Pleasure Beach. I just don't know how anyone could have avoided doing that.
I mean, I guess if you're not from the north, then that's probably why.
But it's iconic. Mm-hmm. I have one of the best holidays I ever went on was to Blackpool. It was when I was about 8, and it was just me and my dad went solo, and it was lovely. And me and him still talk about that as being like one of, just goes to show, some of the best holidays you have. You don't have to go far and you don't have to spend a lot of money. But
yeah,
we did everything. Like, we went to like the circus in the tower, like Blackpool Tower.
Ooh.
And like, but my two most vivid memories that bring me the most joy is walking through the Pleasure Beach car park singing All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. And then when we got to the Pleasure Beach, I didn't want to do anything or go on anything, but I found, and this speaks volumes to like who I was going to become, but I found this bin that had a Hoover in it, so it would like suck your rubbish, and it was in the shape of a tiger, so you'd like feed the tiger rubbish, and then I ran around the entire Pleasure Beach collecting rubbish to feed to the tiger, to the extent that people started just giving me their rubbish, because I was like 7 or something, so it was this little girl like excitedly running around and then feeding the bin. But
oh, bless
so
you,
that's my experience of the Pleasure Beach, and it's as the story. It's literally a story about rubbish.
Why pay for rides when your child can just collect rubbish and have the same amount of enjoyment?
It's exactly what my dad thought. But I think in that story, it kind of goes without saying that the Pleasure Beach is a little bit run down. The early 2000s, so not like prime time for Blackpool. But these old photographs like take me into a world that like I'm familiar with. It's like the not so distant past, and you know, it features people that like look like us, wearing clothes kind of similar to us, and would have lives that kind of mirrored ours a little bit. But the Pleasure Beach just looks awesome. It looks like it looks clean. It looks modern and new. It looks like a jewel. Like, it's clearly the pride and joy of the Blackpool seafront, which you kind of get a hint of now, but it's just not the same. And like, to see the crowds, to see like in these photographs, the way the sunlight hits the architecture and the shadows that it casts, like there's just so many beautiful elements to it. Big fan.
Yeah. A lot of the photos of the Blackpool Pleasure Beach taken by Joseph Emberton is what I've written down. But something you said there, Rosie, is you don't have to have a lot of money or travel far to like get this kind of experience. And that is kind of part of this whole Art Deco by the Sea ideology, is that it was a time, so like World War One ended like just over 10 years, like 10, 15 years ago. People were starting to get money. The economy was getting back on track. And technological advances in like trains and in like cars and like petrol and stuff meant that people could travel further easier. And so this was before like international travel became a thing, but people were encouraged to like travel the country. And like, I was gonna do like staycations. Like, it wouldn't have been seen as that, because like the alternative is to not go anywhere, full stop. So like to actually like travel the country and see all these different things, and like especially for people who lived in big cities, to like, oh look, go to the coast. It's like it is a different world, and it definitely was kind of back in the day. But that's a driving force of a lot of this exhibition, and a lot of that you can see in like the kind of next room as you go in. Mm-hmm. So you've got things kind of advertisements from like train lines, like LNER and that. The southern ones, which I don't know what they're called.
Yeah. But then you see, like, I feel like everyone's familiar with those beautiful posters, the kind of like the Whitley Bay, Colour Coats, Time Mouth illustrated posters that came out. I think, wasn't it Northern Rail or like various train lines came out with them? And they, I think honestly, the posters might be the highlight of this exhibition for me, because generally the aesthetics are just very stylish, very cool, very like, and I say like modern, like it kind of looks like it could be like, this is 100 years ago and it looks like it could have been done yesterday. It's just very cool.
Like I think it's very distinctive of the time, but I think again, kind of like the comparison with architecture and stuff, like of the time it was quite different to what would have came like just before, sort of thing. So it's like very like kind of like calm, like kind of smooth, like color palettes, like not pastel but like nothing like super harsh, and like not so much of a sketchy kind of vibe, but like not super blocky. It's like, again, one of those things like, oh, that looks like it's like 1930s, 1940s advertisements, because that's kind of, it's kind of what it was, and like what informed kind of more 40s and 50s stuff. And I would say kind of, it's reminiscent a little bit of like the kind of like propaganda posters you would have seen during the Second World War. Like
I am so glad like, you said that.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it is propaganda, because if this is encouraging people, and who knows, it's probably the same department or the same groups of people in governments and places, and, you know, that have to encourage people to, before it was grow for, dig for victory and rationing and all that sort of stuff. But now think of it like, well, now the agenda's changed post-war. Mm-hmm. We need to grow the economy. Well, let's encourage people to spend their money around the country, and all advertising is propaganda. Like we've mentioned many times before, we're quite interested in propaganda, and like that's how I like to dissect it, really, that like it's someone trying to get you to do something, and all adverts do that. But this, it's almost like an advert. Something like I consider a lot now when I like think about adverts is like it's trying to sell you a lifestyle, and that lifestyle is often like, think about like, I don't know, Dettol. There was an advert, I think I studied it with like when I did A-level media studies or something, but it's essentially the lowdown on this thing was like, if you don't use Dettol, your kitchen will be dirty and your family will die, or like something like that. Do you know what it's really quite aggressive?
Yeah,
but this advertising is like, it's no excess of words. It's just like, it's, well, an image speaks 1,000 words. Most of the time, it's just like, here's the place, quicker by rail. And then just some beautiful people in a beautiful place doing beautiful things.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, that's how you do it. And it's, anyone could, like, you can just slot yourself into those scenes. And that's how it's so successful. But it seems so much less scary than advertising techniques used today.
Yeah. I mean, I think as well, it's kind of like the approach artists to make this stuff. So it feels like it's kind of a bit different in that sense. It's kind of like, it's not just like an advert and like consumerist and stuff. It's like actually a lovely piece of art, which is like... And this, like, they're huge as well, aren't they? Some of them are just massive. And it's like, I would love that as like a statement piece across just one wall in my house. It would be amazing.
Yes, big time. And there was one day I've not seen. Oh, yeah, totally. Like a vintage one as well. Like, I want it battered around the edges. Mm-hmm. But there were some ones I'd not seen before as well, or less common ones, because you seem to see like the same ones repeated in, like, you know, Life is Gay and Whitley Bay tote bags and coasters and things like that. But this had, like, there's some gorgeous ones that we wouldn't have seen just because they're not, like, local. But there's a lovely Whitley Bay Rockpool one that I loved that I don't see as much. And I don't even see that part of Whitley Bay, like, advertised that much. Like, I know where that is, but I don't know if other people necessarily know where that is. And I don't know. Like, that's kind of fun. That's interesting.
Yeah, that is quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's so exciting seeing, like, we say it all the time. It's like when you see, this is an exhibition that is properly applied to the location that it is being exhibited in, which is exciting. We love that.
I think. Yeah, definitely. Like, I think the Lang does that a lot because the Lang has like quite a big collection. And so I can't remember where this exhibition started. Like, it's again, like, you know, like big collaborative effort of different institutions and galleries, but like when exhibitions move up here, the Lang can usually find something from their own collection to like contribute to it. And the, obviously being a kind of nearly coastal town, like there's a lot of stuff in the collection. And it's just nice to see like where you're from reflected in like big shows like this.
It's like, a representation. I know where that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes it more personal. And it's... And we're like, yeah, it's important to me and to us, I think, that like a gallery or an art institution pays mind to the greater context of the show. So like, it's not just that we're showing this work amongst this other work in this institution. You have to go like further. It's and this institution is in Newcastle, in the north of England. It's near the coast. It's this, it's that. So it does feel very thoughtful. Yeah. And another thing we'll have to say about the Lang that makes them amazing is that when you go to this show, you will learn so much. We say this every time because the Lang loves putting like paragraphs next to every single piece. So if you want to know anything, it's there. And then obviously the staff are always awesome and have bags of information. So
yeah,
it's just class.
Yeah,
love
definitely.
Learning.
Yeah. Well, something we learned in this exhibition is that swimsuits were made out of wool back in the day, which seems bizarre to me.
Mum would always joke about it, and I never really truly believed her. I'm sure her swimsuit was made of wool. Like, she would tell me about it. I don't know. That's probably not true. But I don't think it was that long ago that swimsuits stopped being wool.
Yeah. I mean, they looked very cool.
I would love to be chilling poolside with one of these get-ups on. So when you walk through, so you're like, imagine if you've walked through the first room, you've walked through the photographs, through like bypassed all the beautiful furniture, into the second room, you're met immediately with, you open the doors and then there's like a little fake pool with a fake like poolside and these models, like shop models, like mannequins, that's the word, in like beautiful poses. Chilling, diving, swimming, generally
lounging,
having a lark. Yeah. And like, just we did the game, which one would you wear?
Of course, gotta do it.
Alice had the funky, like, was it a two-piece of the lady who was like diving into the imaginary pool?
Yes.
I had the one, I think it was blue, one piece, just
that one thing, the little embroidery of a person diving on it.
It might have been. I wasn't allowed to take pictures, so I don't know.
Yeah. I might have got a sneaky one of this bit. Let's see if I can find it.
Eesh. Illegal.
I know.
It's gotta be done.
It kind of does. It kind of
does. We're not gonna like try and like sell them illegally or like forge something. That's what I think it must be for. Like, I'm not going to do any forgeries.
Yeah.
But it was like a stripey little number. It was cute.
Yeah.
It was like a little dress.
Kind of white shoulders, white midsection, but like blue and black kind of stripey bits. Like,
yeah, with a cap on.
Obviously, you gotta have your swim cap, Rosie.
These all have the swim caps.
With the swim caps made of wool? That seems counterintuitive, if so.
No, it must have been rubber.
Yeah.
Which, ow. Because, like...
Taking that off, Jesus.
exactly. Anyone with long hair, and here's a fun fact for, like, anyone who doesn't have long hair, when you don't have a scrunchie or a bobble and you need to tie your hair up and you put an elastic band in your hair, there is literally nothing more painful than taking it out. Maybe childbirth, don't know. Haven't had a baby, so I'll have to fill you in when I know, but it's the most painful thing.
Yeah. But it was cool to see them because, like, you kind of see them in, like, I don't know, like archive footage, like kind of one piece suits, like men would wear them as well. And like in like movies that are like set back in the day. But a lot of this section is kind of focused on promoting, like, going to the seaside, doing exercise and swimming and stuff like that as part of, like, this whole, like, healthy kind of living culture.
Yes.
And
the, like, the modern woman, I think, was all, like, she was active as much as she was elegant, you know?
Indeed. Like, I feel as though it was mentioned briefly somewhere in the exhibition, but I did, a little bit of Googling. And I think a reason for that, in part, was the Women's League of Health and Beauty. And this was... a league, which you don't get a lot of things described as a league nowadays.
No.
But it's basically like a big organization where you'd pay like a membership fee and you would do exercises, and a lot of it was focused on like abdominal exercises, but they kind of did kind of concede after a while. It's like, no, not every woman is gonna have a baby, all right. but it was like for that like healthy body, healthy mind, that sort of mentality, and then it just kind of fit perfectly with people like going en masse to the sea and then to resorts and stuff. Like Butlins was a thing that was founded back in the day. And
you could argue maybe this was the beginning of that beach body, like, incentive.
I think you could argue that, yes.
Mm.
But like, I don't think we have any up here, but Lido's, like, there's lots of like photographs and like big posters, like advertising like newly built Lido's. Lido's? It is Lido, isn't it? L-I-D-O.
I thought so, yeah.
Yeah. But I think the only kind of thing I can kind of compare to up here is like the Tynemouth outdoor pool.
Yeah,
which
that's
obviously
the only one I can think of.
Is it like a bit like in disrepair at the minute, but like, yeah, all about swimming and doing it safely if you don't want to go like in the sea.
Yeah. I would absolutely love for them to open up the Tynemouth open air swimming pool. Just even as a lake, kind of, you know, as a just so you can swim in it, just like a body
feature
of water. Yeah, because it's a really, well, this is one thing I think this show like highlighted and that we've already kind of touched on, that like you don't know how important something is necessarily until it's gone sometimes. Like, I just feel like they have come so close to wrecking it or getting rid of it, like a lot of that end of the seafront, like the kind of cliffs and the little walkways that you can go down those cliffs are just really no good.
It's
some of my favorite walks, like walking along from Whitley Bay to Tynemouth is a beautiful walk. RIP that cycle track they had over summer, because I hope they bring that back. But there's so many cool things. Over lockdown, I was having a walk down there and I saw some like live music. So everyone, like there was a musician, and it must have just been like a pop-up or something. But yeah, so everyone was socially distanced like around them, but it's this nice out of the way bit right on the seafront. Beautiful. And I just think there could actually be like the structure of a little theatre or a little, you know, there could actually be little things down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel like that's the spirit. Like, a lot of these things were established in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And perfect example, actually, we talked a little bit about with travel. You can see like Monk's Eaton Metro, Whitley Bay, Tynemouth, or all these beautiful stations that actually were part of the main rail line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the metro took them over. And I think a lot of people don't know, but they were actually like going to tear down Tynemouth station and like make it like another, just a, you know, any other metro station, and people had to fight. It was one woman really fought tooth and nail to make sure that they didn't do that. Thank God, because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But that's, there you are. Like, now you'd never dream of that. Because though, you know, I mean, Whitley Bay and Monk's Eaton metros are a little bit less, like, nicely kept, but they're still gorgeous. Monk's Eaton Metro has these beautiful stained glass windows mm-hmm. that, like, I never, ever want to go. I just think they're, like, they're just amazing. They're parts of history and, like, part of our history we should be proud of. Like, me coming from the coast, I feel like I have this pride that, like, Whitley Bay was the place to be once upon mm-hmm. a time. And I think that's amazing. And but then, like, as you see it travel through time, it is forgotten. Apparently in the 70s and 80s, they just wanted to get gone, like, just get rid.
Yeah.
Rubbish. Like, we'll put something better in there. And now 70s and 80s architecture is not everyone's favorite.
Not so much, no.
And this is. So it's all cycles. Very interesting. But it's just that importance of, like, please don't tear down beautiful things.
Yes. Please don't.
And I just want that, the open air swimming pool, to be, especially next summer, you know, we don't know what COVID's going to be doing. We need to make sure we have beautiful outdoor spaces. Also just generally, because that makes life nice.
It does. It really does.
It would be so lovely if we could just go and, like, you know, have a picnic there or something, or just walk your dog or anything. I think that could be really nice. But it's unfortunately all, like, fenced off, which is annoying.
Yeah.
If anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, and I wish I could remember what music video it was, you might know, Alice.
But it's a recent one, isn't it?
Yeah, but the Tynemouth open air swimming pool is in such bad state that it was actually used in a music video amongst lots of other, like, abandoned industrial places. So it was Sam, maybe someone.
Oh, well, yeah, Sam Smith, yeah, because there
Sam
was some...
Sam Smith, yeah.
There was some of that music video filmed in Bentham, just along my street, of, like, a back lane, I think, before... No, yeah, it used to be a back lane when there was houses there, but they tore all the houses down, and there's just kind of, like, they paved over a bit of the lane, but, like, there was a shot of, like, someone running down there. But, yeah, I remember, yeah, the open-air pool was in that video.
But anyway, that was off topic. So,
to get back to the exhibition. Also in this room is one of the coolest things. You've got the swimsuit. So, say as soon as you walk in, you've got the swimsuit kind of exhibit right there. And then if you go kind of, like, round, like, to the left, like, following the arrows, there's another kind of, like, exhibit of cool, elegant mannequin ladies wearing, like, beautiful, like, evening gowns.
Yes.
Which, again, is kind of part of this, like, ooh, like, going to, like... like, holiday sites and, like, traveling to the coast and staying at hotels, like, you do something nice in the evening, got your nice evening wear. But I would argue that these lovely, lovely dresses are overshadowed by the screen behind them.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's kind of like, you know, like a kind of, like, screen, like a dressing screen where it kind of, like, folds up and stuff. And it's, like, kind of, like, shiny and lacquered, maybe. But it's got like a nice coastal sort of nighttime scene with, like, cliffs kind of arcing round and, like, little bits of, like, rock jutting out the sea, and there's a great, like, there's a nice, like, full moon in the sky casting, like, a really nice reflection along the sea. Mm-hmm. But what the Lang have done, which is especially cool, and this was, like, a little tip given to us by the person we bought the tickets from. She's like, "Ooh, make sure you keep an eye on this in that room." It's they've got a little spotlight on the ceiling directly and perfectly pointed at the moon, so it actually kind of reflects and glows. It's amazing.
It does steal the show. It's the first thing, like, your eyes are just drawn to this moon behind these gowns. And it's kind of impressive because these gowns are beautiful, firstly. But then, to be fair, this screen is, it could be a wall. like calling it a screen is like not really doing it justice. It is a screen, so it's correct, but it's like heavy duty enough that depending on whose house you were in, it would probably go from like ceiling to floor and like probably block out more sound than most people's walls.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like a proper bit of kit and it's lovely. Oh, yeah. It's so interesting how something that's black can like illuminate light.
Yeah, it's great. It's by Jean Dinand. It's called Claire de Lune screen, which Claire de Lune just means moonlight, and it's from 1928. Oh. And it comes to the Lang from the Royal Pavilion and Museums in Brighton. But it's mint, like, just beautiful.
Yeah. And there was like, well, the thing is, with this show, as with many shows at the Lang, there is so much to take in. There were so many elements, because I feel like we've gone into depth about like architecture and photography a bit and like, and yeah, like a little bit of fashion and stuff. But there's so much more we could talk about. And I'd like, it's hard to pick and choose. This is already going to be a super long episode.
Yeah.
So it's like, I want to go into detail. Because there were some beautiful blouses with amazing prints on them. And
oh, just like people playing golf on them. It was very cool.
Yeah. And little cute buttons and just, lovely. Again, it's the attention to detail. That's what I really appreciated with not just the whole movement, but this show, I feel, is a good testament to that attention to detail.
Yes,
so many
absolutely.
Different elements. I would love to talk about some of the printed, I think it was in this room, some of the, because it was about like evening entertainment, this little section, I think. So there was a lot to do with kind of like casinos and things like that. And I just have to talk about one of my personal favorite objects in this show was, I'm going to try and find the artist or the designer rather. But it was a child's menu for the casino.
Yeah, it was for the Blackpool Pleasure Beach Casino, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Tom Purvis in the 1930s. This is the note I made of it. So I literally just wrote the title, the name, the date. It's called Blackpool Pleasure Beach Casino Children's Menu. And the extent of my notes was just lol. Because I just found that really funny for some reason. Like, so like, it's the 30s. Life is good. You've taken your beautiful family to the seaside, and obviously you're not going to get a babysitter when you want to go gambling with your beautiful wife or husband. You're just going to take the kids. It's fine. It's fun for all the family.
Just put them on the little kids' table, give them the menu, get them some ice cream, sorted.
But I feel like there was like proper like creches and stuff at casinos, which now is so problematic. But then, genius.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no reason just to not go, really.
Thinking of it in, like, the 30s, it's like, wow, so classy, so cool. But then if you think about someone in, like, the 80s taking their child to a creche in a casino, not cute.
Definitely not as cute, no.
No. But it was also just, the pamphlets that they did have were just gorgeous. Again, it was a lot of, like, watercolour and, like, is it lithograph kind of printing?
Yes, lithograph.
Because that's all the posters were, that's how they were made. But, yeah, just really, it's quite nice when everything had to be drawn, I think.
Yeah.
That was the main takeaway. Like, people weren't going to be using photographs for like the majority of their advertising and things like that.
Yeah, because color wasn't much of a thing yet, so it's like you want to kind of get across, like, you know, like nice sunshine, like nice colors and stuff.
Exactly.
And so in the day you had to draw it if you wanted any amount of color.
Yeah. People with rosy cheeks and the like.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite posters is in this room, and it's for New Brighton and Wallasey. And I think this is on some of the promotional material for this exhibition, but it's basically a kind of mid shot of this lady like looking directly into like the camera with like a swimsuit on and a swim cap, which is on like a diving board. And you can see like the massive like kind of lido in front of her with like hundreds of people there having a good time. And you can see like the beach beyond that and like the sea and stuff and some lighthouses. But it's just such a cool image.
She looks rather cheeky. Like,
Yeah, she's got kind of a knowing glare. Like, I wasn't say glance, but no, it's like direct eye contact.
It is very intense.
But this is a great example of not seeing a train anywhere in this image, but it's for, I mean, I don't know what LMS is, but it's for like a travel thingy, because it's saying like, oh, like, cheap fares and train services apply at any LMS station or agency. So it's a travel like poster advertising to travel and who to travel with. But obviously the train journey isn't necessarily the thing that's being advertised. It's like, oh, look where we can take you. Mm-hmm. Look how much fun you could have like this lady.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. Also, this is another one where it's like, it's friggin' huge.
Yes, that was part of it.
Yes. Oh, for London, Midland and Scottish Railway Company. It's by Septimus Edwin Scott, which is a great name. But he did a lot of these posters that you'll see like all around the exhibition. He did quite a few. But amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, big fan of his.
Yeah. Something to touch on just real quick in this room before we move on to the final room. Is like in a cabinet, like in the bottom corner of the room, is just a bunch of like old radios, but like they're lush,
like yeah.
It was like the 30s. Bakelite is, I mean, it's essentially plastic, but it's like the big precursor to plastic we currently have now. So you can mass produce stuff, you can make molds of things, pour it with bakelite, let it set, then you've got a product. But again, it's one of those things that you were saying before, Rosie. Like a bowl's a bowl until time has passed. Like, I wonder if people back in the day are like, oh yeah, like the radio we've got in the kitchen, I wonder if this will ever be in a museum. You probably wouldn't think that, but
yeah.
I love an old radio. I hate listening to the radio, but I do love the like the object of a radio.
You know what, Jacob is exactly the same. Like, so me and my boy, when my grandma was moving house, went to London to help my uncle like clear stuff out and stuff, but we could take, if we wanted anything, we could take anything, and neither of us really listened to the radio, but we have a radio, like a 1930s radio. Aww, now sick. And it works, but like we don't use it. It's just because it's a beautiful object, like with the little dials and like, yeah, it's just lovely. But these I mean, that's just a little one that I've got, but these are like bits of furniture. They're fab.
Kind of,
and
big.
You could tell they were like a feature in someone's house. And I feel like their version of high tech is, you can see like on where you can see all the frequencies and things. It has like, it tells you where like Radio Paris is and,
yeah,
you know, all these exotic stations that you might not otherwise listen to. Mm-hmm. So I had fun like kind of reading all the settings.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely. And it would have been, pretty it cool. Really would have been like the focal point of someone's house, which is nice to think about. People kind of worshipping it in that way. Like, people would have been dancing around that radio a few hundred years ago. And it's kind of sad that it's not sad that it's in a museum, but if, like, sometimes I like to think about if the object was sentient, like, how would it feel? What a weird journey it's been on.
I was going to say, yeah.
I'm sure there's a podcast called Everything is Alive that I should listen to, because it's about an interviewer talking to objects.
Ooh.
So like they talk to like the toothbrush. It's like someone's acting, like some, like they have an actor to be the toothbrush and they have a conversation. So yeah, so I should probably, I'll listen to that. That's my homework. I'll tell you next episode if it's good.
That's quite cool. Mint.
Cool.
Okay, but going out of this room,
we're going to my favorite room.
Yeah, so this room is actually like the Barber Watercolor Gallery. So this is where Watercolor at War was on last year. So now you can only access it if you've like start like in this exhibition, and the like entire first room is just all of these beautiful like travel posters. There's the huge Whitley Bay one is like immediate on your left as soon as you go in. But on like the next wall along, like a long wall, is great. It's like a series of six like posters. It's like lithograph style huge posters. And what's cool about it is I think they're all advertising like it, I don't think it's advertising a specific place, but it's for East Coast trains. So yeah, one would assume somewhere on the East Coast, like the Yorkshire coast or something. But Since they're all put together like they are, you can see it's actually just one scene, like one big coastline, just split up into six different individual posters. And they're, again, by Tom Purvis, who's done quite a few of the kind of posters and designs and stuff in this exhibition. But they're amazing, yeah. Man.
They're lovely. I can't remember what they were called, but they had, like, it was because they each have a different activity on them. So there's, like, walking tours, sunbathing, sea bathing, which I loved, just to distinguish those two, and fishing and paddling and sports and things like that. So it's
speed boating.
Ooh, yes. But they are, and I almost feel like these ones, it's such a showstopper because I think they're a lot more simplistic than a lot of the other posters, but they get a lot more done, which is exciting.
Yeah,
because there's one where like it's there's people like in a boat just like having a bit of a like splash around, like no one has faces, it's literally just like skin color and then clothes color and flat blue for the water, but there's so much like movement in it, every line is so intentional and like they're just very well considered compositions, especially when considering it's not just the composition of each poster that then has to slide in with all the other posters.
Yeah.
I would absolutely love, like, imagining like a hallway or something, like having like all of these just in your house.
Yeah, I can dig
Beautiful. Really, like, this show made me want to decorate my house. That's something.
Aww.
Very, very stylish. Always styling.
But like this room has like a lot of posters, like lots of ones for down south, like Great Yarmouth and like Clacton-on-Sea and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But like the next little room when you go in is like a lot more northeast based stuff. And this is where me and Rosie both learned that the like Exhibition Park was this huge, huge, beautiful complex of which it scant one building remains. But it was just like a whole wall of black and white photos, like lots of aerial photos and stuff.
Yeah.
Just showing it all. And it looked amazing. And why on earth did they tear a bunch of it down? It was lush.
And we're talking like factory sized buildings.
Yeah. Like
and
huge.
And it was for the Exhibition of the North, wasn't it? So it was all like basic. It was all exhibition spaces. So it was it was like essentially because they had, it wasn't just exhibiting art. It was like engineering as well and like, you know, like bigger picture kind of design.
Yeah.
But just think about, I mean, like it would probably be university owned by now if it was still like standing, but like just think of the cool stuff you could have in there. Or and it would just, and it backs onto the moor, so it's just like perfect location for literally anything. I was gonna say an art gallery, but then I was like, nah, it could be, that's perfect for apartments, that's perfect for like, I was like, it could be an eco village, obviously, because I want everything to be an eco village, like carbon neutral shopping center.
Well, I mean, even if it was like university stuff, like that might have made us stay at Newcastle for uni, because that would be so cool.
Oh, imagine if that was like the new... Oh, okay, this doesn't exist at all. But what if there was a Newcastle Arts University and it was in those... Right, parallel universe. Parallel universe. The buildings in Exhibition Park didn't get torn down. Someone was inspired by them, founded an art school in Newcastle... And then me and Alice both went to that school, and that's how we meet in this alternative universe. Sorted.
It's out there somewhere.
Yep, it's happening, just not here.
but like, there was next. Go on.
Oh, I'm just excited.
I was going to say, like, next to that display is just other like Art Deco scenes around the Northeast. So it's like old cinemas, like Westmount Seaton Metro, the old co-op building in town, which is now like Premier Inn.
I hadn't even thought of that, and that's so obvious.
Yeah, like me, I remember very briefly when I was little, me Nana worked there just before, I think it closed down in like 99 or 2000 or something. So I really briefly remember visiting me Nana when she worked on the sales floor there. But again, that kind of like 20s, 30s, like big department store building is what that was. But it was cool seeing, again, I think these would have all been from the Lang's collection, seeing like up here stuff. And it's like, oh, that's how it was. That's so cool.
really good. I think, I honestly think that room makes this exhibition, if none of this interests you, which is, I don't know why you're listening, if that is the case, but okay, live your life. But if you or someone you know like wasn't really interested in what we've talked about so far, I think it's worth going just for the final room. Like,
yeah,
if we'd paid and it had been one room and that had been the room, I would have been like, money well spent. The other two rooms were just almost like a bonus. Like, this was like our history. And that's what I wanted to see. That's what I love.
Yeah, that's good.
What's that cafe?
Our Rendezvous Cafe.
Rendezvous, of course. Like, it's so obvious. There's so many examples of Art Deco still around, still used for what they were used for as well. Like, Rendezvous Cafe has always been that. And it's an establishment. I love it. So,
yeah, man.
And it's amazing. Although we're in a leather lockdown, it's the kind of, maybe when all this is over, pop to the Rendezvous for a cup of coffee.
I want to pop along. I've never been.
You've never been?
I know.
What?
I'm not a coast baby like you.
God.
It hasn't ever just been there for me. I have to like go to Whitley Bay and then walk along. I mean, I've walked past it a few times, but I've just never had the time to pop in.
That's fair. I shouldn't
One
judge.
Day, though. It'll happen. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'll be there. Would recommend, because it's gorgeous.
It seems like a proper cafe.
It really is. It really, and the ladies that work there have always been super nice. And it can, and I love that it gets busy, but it's this kind of like small business. It's been here for this long. Let's make sure COVID doesn't take it out, right?
Yeah.
Another maybe less glamorous example is at the Park Hotel in Tynemouth. Because I immediately, when we walked in, and to, like Alice said, immediately to the left when you walk in, the first room, like when you first walk into the exhibition, there's like all these lovely photographs of hotels. And I immediately thought, I was like, kind of like the Park Hotel. And lo and behold, there's a picture of the Park Hotel. So I called it. Yes, got you.
Got it.
Get it. I know Art Deco. So I think that was the main takeaway for me. It's like, oh, wow, there's loads of history. Like, this history everywhere.
Yeah.
And that we're quite lucky that Newcastle is so close to the sea, just because it's lovely to be by the sea. But then I feel like there is all this, you know, you could walk past the Park Hotel, which was like this era, but then you walk a little bit further and there's like proper Victorian structures where, like, because, you know, the Victorians loved the seaside. So they did it proud. And it's nice. It just made me consider my environment a little bit more, I think.
Yeah.
Walking around this and appreciating the different layers of history that are all around us.
Mm-hmm.
It was the co-op building that got me. I was like, I'm an idiot. That's so Art Deco. And I didn't even think about it.
Yep. Also, I think I kept on commenting on it to you at the exhibition. The song Art Deco by Lana Del Rey has just been running through my head this entire time. Only the line of "You're so Art Deco," that's it. That's all I can think.
Like, every person in the posters, "You're so Art Deco," and "You're so Art Deco," and you're so Art Deco.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much more in this exhibition that we haven't really touched on, but there's just so much in this exhibition to touch on. It's so interesting. Like, it's one of those things, like, when you go, you can take like completely different things away and like kind of be drawn in more specifically by other things. But it's amazing. I love kind of pretty much all the exhibitions at the Lang, but this one kind of really knocked it out of the park.
This is like, I think I haven't been this excited since maybe the Naked Portrait. For a Lang, like, obviously the Lang always puts on really high quality shows, but it's a personal thing. And I think maybe because it's the sea and it's very much like applied to my life, I was like, wow, this is like, I was really engaged. It was, and it's all beautiful. So
yeah,
it's best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Engaged and enthralled.
Yeah. But I think we can maybe just end it there a bit. I think we're definitely ticking over an hour here.
Yeah, we've, and as you can tell, I feel like we have so much more we want to talk about.
Yeah.
But we just can't. It's just too much.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've left you wanting more and you can show the Lang some love. It's hard. Yeah. It's so hard. But another thing I do want to mention is how safe we felt.
Yes.
Because it's weird that we have to talk about that. But as always, I think art galleries are some of the best places to be if you're in like a kind of lock, like a social distance situation. Mm-hmm. Because it's a nice, quiet, slow, peaceful kind of space. Mm-hmm. And you like generally do, like, I don't want to over, like, I don't want to crowd someone when they're looking at a painting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, so I wouldn't do that in a normal situation. No, so like it's even more like socially like respectable at the moment. So, you know, give it your space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're in a gallery. We're in no rush. Like, we're here to just stand and look at beauty.
Yeah, very much so. We were there for ages. It was great.
Yeah, mate, got our money's worth. So yeah, it was really good. Really clearly signposted. Staff at all the doors. So not just if you had any questions, but they were kind of keeping an eye on everything and everyone. So big safety factor. Two thumbs up.
Yeah.
Good job, Lang.
Yeah. So obviously you can't go and see this exhibition at the very earliest until after the 2nd of December. But it's on until towards the end of February. I want to say February 21st. I'll have to double check that. But like, hopefully there's like enough time to like actually check it out after the current lockdown that we're in. So we would very much recommend you do so.
And who knows, maybe like, I don't know, every gallery is different, but a lot of galleries like extending things or the stuff like that. So just keep an eye out, follow the Lang on Instagram and stuff like that, and just keep in the loop.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, and if you get the chance again after lockdown, you don't even have to like pay to go and see this exhibition. Just pop into the Lang. They have loads of cool stuff on. So because we popped into one of the non-paying galleries, and they always have, because their gallery, like, because their collection is so vast, they always have like your old favorites and then some new stuff as well. So it's just worth it just to pop in. I think they've still got the Chris Killip stuff on show. R.I.P. Chris Killip. Very sad on the passing of this fabulous artist.
Yeah.
But glad we did.
It's an amazing show. It's all about shipbuilding on the Tyne back in like the 70s and stuff. So definitely check that out.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah, it's like a few decades after Art Deco. See what was going on.
More like coastal adjacent stuff.
Yeah. Okie dokie, I don't want to stop talking about it, but we're going to have to.
I think we are going to have to. Well, you can keep on talking, because the way we like to end episodes is to talk about something that we're looking forward to doing or seeing or something like that. So, Rosie, what are you looking forward to?
Well, mine's a humble brag. So
love it. Love it so far.
I'm looking forward to Christmas because I have got the majority of my Christmas shopping done.
Nice. Well done.
Thank you. And the reason, honestly, the reason I got it done is because I'm choosing, and I usually do choose to shop local and shop small and independent. And in order to do that, realistically, you have to shop early, because if they're making it for you, if it's like a custom order, or if it's just a solo person, you know, if it's one person in their studio shipping out their products, you just got to give them a bit of time. And then also there's the whole searching component as well, because I like to go to like vintage shops and secondhand shops and places like that for a nice eco Christmas. So yeah, this is my reminder to everyone, actually, to, this is why I bring it up, not just to brag, because I'm very proud of myself. This is like the most organized I've been, and it's literally because there's nothing else to do. but please, please try, everyone listening, please try and just to shop a little bit more thoughtfully this Christmas, this season, because we don't want billionaires getting richer. We want real life people like you and me getting richer. So
yeah. Very good point.
Billionaires are immoral, and it's not ethical for billionaires to exist. So, because for billionaires to exist, just in case anyone doesn't get this, for billionaires to exist, someone has to be exploited down the ladder. So how about we just elevate everyone by choosing to shop with actual human beings?
Yeah.
Cool. That's my piece. I've said it.
Yeah, but a good piece.
Right, Alice, what's good with you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, since lockdown's eased up before this current lockdown, I can use the dark room again in the New Bridge project, where I'm an associate member. So I've only been in once, and I was supposed to give the key back today, because if you're an associate member, you get a key like for 2 weeks. But I was just like, can I just keep it for like this month? And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. So
nice.
I think tomorrow I'm going to pop back into the dark room and just get printing, because I've taken like thousands of photos. Well, probably not thousands, hundreds of photos since like March this year. So
that would be so interesting. You should put like some like quarantine zines together of like the photographs you took, like in retrospect, like reflecting back on that time.
Yeah. Oh, that could be a little project I do. But yeah, there you are. That's what I'm looking forward to. It's just fun and like therapeutic and common. I'll like either whack a podcast on or put like a Spotify playlist on, because there's like a little speaker I can plug my phone into, and just chill in some red light, making some photos for a few hours. It's lovely.
Love that. Oh, and that's New Bridge Project.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's worth becoming a member or an associate member. So there'll be links on our blog post, probably, if Alice puts it on there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm saying it, and I never say that because I don't do it. Alice is like, there'll be links, because she's the one that does it.
Yeah.
No, we'll put something somewhere. May or may not be links.
But yeah, I mean, speaking of a blog post, we post all episodes on our website at heyartwhatsgood.com. I was like, is that right? It is. heyartwhatsgood.com. That's us. And then you can also see photos of the exhibition and the things that we've talked about on our Instagram and Twitter at heyartwhatsgood on both platforms. And if you've got any cool recommendations for things to check out, or if you've got any questions or thoughts or queries or anything like that, you can send me an email at heyart. I always keep on saying at, because like it is at, but not like at as in the social media sense. People know how emails work. It's fine. heyartwhatsgood@gmail.com. There we go.
Got there.
So yeah, I think that's
rusty,
everything.
But it's fine. And we're thinking about doing some like non-exhibition episodes. So if there's just anything arty or creative that you'd want to hear us talk about, please give us some topics, because we want to
ideas,
talk about
please.
Stuff and we don't really know what to talk about.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll catch you in the next one.
Stay safe. Bye.
Bye.